In 1954, we awakened something.
There's nuclear tests in the Pacific. Not tests.
They are trying to kill it.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's retrospective series covering the Legendary Entertainment MonsterVerse films.
The return of an ancient and forgotten super species. Godzilla, the Mutos, Kong.
Hosted by Jacob.
Good thing he's on our side.
Stuart.
He's not part of the natural order.
And Arnie.
None of us have ever faced a situation quite like this one.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and mild language.
You have no idea what's coming, and it is going to send us back to the Stone Age.
Listener discretion is advised.
Do you have everything you need?
Good. Let's get started.
Today, we're discussing Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. Is that how you say it? Godzilla times Kong?
No, it's X. Like, come on. You're not down with, like, young crossover culture. You got to mix things up, bring two things together that are cool. You got to put that X in there.
Starring a giant CGI ape, a giant CGI lizard.
This is an animated feature, basically.
And scattered among there is Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, Dan Stevens, Kaylee Hoddle, directed by Adam Wingard. Wakey wakey, everyone. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
Hey, and this is the co-host with an Ace Ventura hippy dippy sixth sense, Jacob.
Love that line, because I was actually calling Trapper Ace Ventura in my notes because I didn't catch his name early on.
He's the only one whose name they say like 10 times. Everyone else, all these humans, I never got their names. I think they said Bernie once.
They say Gia a lot.
But there are less humans this time. I want to point out we are back at the MonsterVerse. This is MonsterVerse number 5. It's been going for a decade since that Godzilla. And who remembers those films?
Does the Aaron Taylor Johnson one count? Does anyone even remember Aaron Taylor Johnson?
Maybe that got him James Bond. We don't know. I doubt it, but who knows?
I went back. I had to. I couldn't remember this MonsterVerse. I couldn't have tied them together. Not that they really do anyway. But yeah, I went back and watched all 5. Not only that, but did you know that Apple Plus has a TV series? If you don't feel like these movies have enough character stories and people running around, there's a whole 10 episodes of Monarch the series you can go to as well. I did all of that this week.
I've been meaning to watch this. I got a friend that watched it. He really enjoyed it, recommended it, but I haven't seen it. Is it necessary to understand this cartoon of a film?
He enjoyed it?
Yeah.
What did he enjoy about it?
I don't know. I didn't want to get into spoilers, but he really liked it, and he enjoys Godzilla, so I guess anything Godzilla is a plus.
So do I, and Godzilla's not in it. He has 2 scenes in the entire 10 hours. Obviously, you know, they're not going to have the budget to do what the movies do. And yes, you're going to have to rely on character actors. They try to do this 2 timeline thing. We're going to see the creation of Monarch in the 50s, and they're going to have one character played by Wyatt Russell in that storyline. And then his dad, Kurt Russell, plays him in the later years when he gets some kids together, and they're all trying to solve this mystery that I did not care about. Again, who cares about what the humans are doing in a Godzilla movie?
I mean, those early MonsterVerses did. They thought we cared.
Well, I think there has been an adjustment, hasn't there?
Yes, there has.
Yes. And I definitely feel like if you missed the old, yes, Godzilla of 10 years ago, maybe this is fascinating for you. Why do you want to watch a MonsterVerse series without monsters, with stock footage monsters and one really bad CGI scene of John Goodman? They got him back for 1 week. To run from a giant spider that was very unconvincing. Yeah, you can't do it. This is why we go to the movies. This is still why people go to the movies, is to have that big budget special effects extravaganza that TV cannot replicate week by week.
And I said that with the last Godzilla versus Kong, different consonant between their names and that one, because that was during the gray hazy days of COVID when they're like, we'll just push stuff to HBO Max. We know people still don't want to go to the theaters. And I remember watching that. I'm like, man, I wish I saw this on a big screen because, yeah, I think that's the way these big monster cartoons should be watched.
And I did not remember almost anything about Godzilla versus Kong. And I think it's because I did watch it at home on HBO Max. And I just don't think that watching at home created the deep memories that watching in a theater does, because I had to go back and rewatch that one. I'm like, I know they fought, and I know they fought to a standstill, and they teamed up against something, but I couldn't even remember Mechagodzilla was in it.
I think I was the biggest fan of that one anyway. My question is, maybe for you, Stuart, because you rewatched everything plus Monarch, I don't remember there being like Titans just everywhere on Earth sleeping. Was that established in the movies, or was that in Monarch they established that?
Nah, I mean, it's more or less, I mean, we only care about two, maybe three, but yes, Godzilla King of Monsters is the one that was really monster crazy. Almost every other scene was something Rodan or something waking up. That was the least successful. I want to point out that was the most expensive of the series. It seems to be the least popular.
My least favorite of this universe.
And it made the least amount of money. They almost stopped after that one. But Kong vs. Godzilla, even though it was during pandemic, ended up internationally doing bigger business.
Since we're looking back at the previous movies, which one had Mothra? Was that King of Monsters? I can't remember Mothra.
Yeah, I remember Mothra showed up. She died in that, right? I guess that's why she's in an egg again?
Yes, yes. She is born at the beginning of King of Monsters, and she gives her life.
Oh, so she was good in that one as well.
Yes. She's the, you know, token female, I feel like is how she's sold. The queen of monsters, I hear it billed. But, you know, something else has happened for Godzilla since that time. It's worth bringing up, even though it may not be in-universe. He won an Oscar. Godzilla may be more popular than he ever has. The guy in the rubber suit that kicks over the train set won an Oscar for Best Visual Effects.
That had to be a honorary Oscar, right? Because the movie's great, but the best visual effects of an entire year, it didn't have a lot of visual effects.
It was a cheap movie. I think it only cost $12 million. A fraction of what these MonsterVerse movies did. But yeah, you know, what I would say about it, well, maybe one day review it, I'll get deeper into my thoughts. But yeah, I really liked it. I was really surprised by it. It is the only one where I feel like the weight of the human story is worthy of the time. It's the only one where I'm not waiting for the Godzilla to come back on screen and get these people off. It actually found a storyline that dramatically works in parallel to Godzilla. And that's what MonsterVerse tried to do, and just, again, hasn't been able to find that. One thing I note about this one coming back is no Millie Bobby Brown, no Alexander Skarsgård.
Yeah, people that I don't remember.
A large cast of characters of fairly recognizable names.
Yeah, Millie Bobby Brown, I know who that is, but I don't miss her.
Right, yeah, they have just decided it's a cost-cutting thing. This is the cheapest Godzilla MonsterVerse movie that they have made by about $40 million. And I have to believe some of that is, we're just not going to have all those people.
Who cared about the people? When I rewatched Godzilla versus Kong, my opinion of it went down. I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd back in 2021. And that's a really high review coming from me. That means I really liked the film. And watching it a second time, or maybe it was a third, I don't remember how often I watched it in 21. But watching it again this time, I was just really put off by the human stuff. I'm like, there's way too much human stuff. I don't care about Millie Bobby Brown. I like Alexander Skarsgård from True Blood, but I didn't think he was very good in that movie, and they just focused way too much on the humans when I wanted to focus more on the monsters. I'd still recommend Godzilla vs. Kong, but it was a much weaker experience for me here. So when I saw that they were cutting down on the human characters for this one, the opening credits, there's like 5 names as far as human actors go. And I'm like, yes, I don't want all of that.
Yeah, that seems to be wise. And I'll just go ahead and, since I watched them all over again, there's only one you really need to see. I mean, what's weird about MonsterVerse is it took this Godzilla fan and turned him into a Kong devotee. I only care when Kong is on the screen. I don't like this Godzilla. So, yeah, 3 of these movies are problematic in part because of that lizard. Skull Island is a really solid entertainment and has a good cast of human characters, but the rest of them are all shrugs.
I'd agree that my memory is the humans in Skull Island are the only humans I've ever cared about.
Yeah, these MonsterVerse films are very, maybe American-focused. Like, they're always putting Kong on the forefront, like, especially this one. This is Godzilla x Kong, and wow, there's very little Godzilla.
Yeah, coming in, I thought Godzilla must be the more popular one. He keeps getting top billing. So Godzilla X Kong, I expected a Godzilla movie. When we get to my plot summary, I barely mentioned Godzilla. This is Kong featuring Godzilla like a remix.
Yeah, and I think some of that is we just relate more to apes, right? They're closer to us as a species, and just something about the performance, he feels more human. And yeah, you can do more with him. Maybe you can have Godzilla have a family and show personality. I mean, I definitely think that he can be funny when I think about certain incarnations of the character in the past, in the Japanese movies. But in this series, he's almost devoid of personality. He's the threat. Usually he is the scary thing. Because they chose to play Godzilla scary, yeah, they have to go to Kong for all the drama. And that's not so bad. Again, I really did like Skull Island. I'm happy to see Kong back. I don't know if I would enjoy just a Godzilla movie without him.
Yeah, I've come around on this version of Kong. I've said in the past when we reviewed all those Kong films, like I really liked the Peter Jackson one. It brought this weird humanity to this giant ape. And yeah, I think they've finally gotten around to doing that with this one as well. Like they, like you said, Stuart, they made him more relatable to us humans.
Yeah, it started with that last movie, having the child that could do sign language with him and all of that. They've retained it. That's the characters that are coming back, this Team Kong. So yeah, it's called Godzilla X Kong, but it should be Kong dot 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 and a little Godzilla.
Yeah, Kong's new empire featuring Godzilla for 5 minutes.
Yes, I definitely think he's a special guest star.
Well, you know, as you said, Stuart, Godzilla has an Oscar. He's too big for crossover films anymore. He'll do a cameo, but he's not going to play second fiddle.
How'd you guys see this? I decided to go big. Obviously, IMAX, but one time a day, they also air it in 3D. So I saw this movie with the glasses on.
I didn't know they still did 3D.
Me either. That's why I did it.
Yeah, I had a chance to see this in 3D, and my wife's eyes don't do 3D very well, so I ended up not seeing it. My preferred time would have been 3D, because that would have been 6 o'clock on a Friday, so I'd have been done by 9 o'clock or so. I went to see this at the Alamo again, on their the big show screen with the laser projection and the big screen and everything, and sold out show again. I don't know if these movies are just really big hits down here in Texas, or if I just need to understand if I'm going on a Friday night to the new movie of the week, it's going to be sold out at Alamo because Ghostbusters was sold out too. But every seat was full of people excited, getting their Godzilla versus Kong pint glasses that Alamo was selling. And they sold out of pint glasses. It almost led to a riot pre-movie.
Yeah, that has more to do with alcohol than Kong versus Godzilla, I think.
And I don't even know how to predict theater audiences anymore. I had, Friday truly was Good Friday because I had it off of work. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the first viewing of this. Just have that theater to myself, be able to enjoy this. Maybe even be able to pull out my phone to take some notes because who's going to be there Friday morning at 11:45 in this 300-seat theater? It was like halfway full. I was shocked. I guess LA Unified is out this week as well as next week. So there's a lot of families there. Which surprised me. I guess they wanted those matinee prices. I'm like, is this sold out later? It was not. So I guess people just wanted that matinee deal. They had their kids home from school. But I was surprised. It was, like I said, a bunch of people in there, over 100.
Yeah, mostly families. I'd say a third full. And yeah, I do think that this is, wisely, this series has started to target a child audience. You know, it feels less weighty, less characters, more simplistic in all ways. It is targeting kids, and that was who was there.
Oh my God, it is such a soft PG-13. I had to check to see if it was PG.
This had a 13 after it?
Wow, I'm shocked.
Yeah, because all the blood in this is green or yellow or...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess there are some gross moments. We can talk about it. Arnie, why don't you give us a very simple plot?
It's been a few years since the events of the last movie, and we see Kong has spent that time exploring Hollow Earth, trying to find more of his kind to no avail. We also see at the start of this movie that King Kong has a toothache. Desperate for some Ambisol, Kong goes up to the Earth's surface. Kong has been monitored this whole time by a Monarch observing station, led by Dr. Eileen Andrews, played by Rebecca Hall. She calls in Titan veterinarian Trapper, played by Dan Stevens, who's able to do a tooth extraction and replacement on the giant ape. Happy with his new grill, Kong goes back to Hollow Earth. Down there, a sinkhole reveals a new, unexplored area of Hollow Earth. Going down, Kong meets and defeats a group of giant apes, but befriends a young ape that Wikipedia tells me is named Suko.
Yeah, I don't know where you got that name when I saw it in the notes.
I know, that Wikipedia, and I don't know why they know that.
Yeah, I read another article that was like, we list all the Titans in the Godzilla X Kong movie, and they just called him Baby Kong, which is what I put in my notes. I had a lot of BK, not for Burger King, but Baby Kong. But Wikipedia tells me he's Suko. Suko leads Kong to an entire tribe of giant apes led by the Scar King. Kong and Scar battle for dominance, and it seems Kong will win, so Scar calls out a titan the king ape keeps in captivity, an ice-breathing giant monster named Shimo. Scar uses a crystal to control this titan, and Kong is no match for both Scar and Shimo, so he's forced to retreat with severe frostbite on one arm. Meanwhile, Kong had been followed into this new area of Hollow Earth by the film's few human characters. Dr. Andrews and Trapper went down, accompanied by Andrews' daughter Gia, played by Kaylee Hotley, and conspiracy podcaster Bernie, played by Brian Tyree Henry. Gia had been having psychic visions tied to this new area of Hollow Earth, and following her visions, the humans find a secret temple. In that temple live the last survivors of the Iwi tribe, thought to have gone extinct on Skull Island with Gia, the last surviving Iwi. The injured Kong returns to the humans, and Trapper has an idea to help Kong's frozen arm. Monarch had been prototyping Titan armor to make Kong stronger to defeat future threats, and it just so happens that the one piece built was a right arm exoskeleton, the exact arm that Kong got hurt. Now fitted with this new arm, Kong is stronger than ever. Gia, using sign language, tells Kong they need help, so Kong goes to the surface to bring Godzilla to Hollow Earth to help fight Scar and Shimo. And yes, Godzilla is in this movie. He spends three quarters of it cameoing as he randomly attacks cities and other titans powering up. Godzilla has picked up on the same psychic waves Gia did and knew Scar and Shimo were going to try to conquer the surface world, so Godzilla has been eating nuclear power plants and such to become stronger. When Kong comes to the surface, first Godzilla fights the ape, but then Mothra appears. Mothra was freed from the Iwi temple by Gia, and Mothra's presence quells the fight in Godzilla, and Godzilla x Kong go to Hollow Earth to fight Scar x Shimo. There's a big fight underground, and they fall through a portal, and the four titans land in Rio, where the battle continues. Suko arrives in Rio, trying to bring Kong his axe from the last film, and Suko destroys Scar's crystal, freeing Shimo from Scar's control. Together, Godzilla, Kong, and Shimo have no problem defeating the evil giant ape. This threat abated, Godzilla goes to Rome to sleep, Mothra goes back to wherever she came from, Kong and Suko, along with Shimo, go back to the Tribe of Apes, where he is now the Alpha, and credits roll.
As we get started, this is kind of what I was asking for. I know when we covered Transformers, I had similar thoughts. Why don't we just have movies where the actual title characters are the stars? And I didn't know whether it was because that's just too expensive of a movie, we can't do that, or we paid a lot of money for these actors to be in it. But this movie has, again, I want to stress, it's transitioning to the idea that we're just going to spend a lot of time with Kong, starting right here at the beginning with him hunting and being hunted by some wolf monsters.
This has to be not just an idea of shifting the movies to these new characters, but when I looked at the box office for Godzilla vs. Kong, its international box office was huge. That movie made almost $500 million. And the more wordless you are, the more you don't have to have subtitles to translate for foreign audiences, right? So this is a largely wordless film that is focused on roars, and I gotta think there's some marketing savvy behind that.
I went back to a Pixar film, WALL-E, which is a mostly silent film for at least the first act, and that was something that was praised. It's something I thought was really cool about that film, that yeah, let's do this silent era thing where it's about the physical action and communicating things non-verbally, and you're going to get a lot of that in this, and it's something I like. Again, this is just a monkey cartoon we're basically watching.
Yeah, I love his trick. We think he's trapped on the cliff edge, but he really has set a snare. He gets one of these wolves in his hands and just rips it above his head, rips it in half. All this green innards like pours on him. And then like, yeah, you realize it's hard to get a meal. Like this was all just to get a meal. The guy has to like then go shower off and try to fight a lizard to eat these remnants.
But I had to laugh as he's eating the remnants and he bites on a bone and pulls it back. And I'm like, are you telling me Kong has a cavity? Are you really telling me Kong needs dental work?
That's what I love about this opening. It's like, just Kong's got it rough. There's some animal that steals his food after that big fight, and then that toothache. I'm like, it's tough being the king.
And lonely. I mean, more to the point, we were told at the end of the last movie, he's finally home, but home is full of predators and prey. There is no other ape. And so that is what this movie is going to resolve for him. I think it gets said. We have an interspersed TED talk with our main human character, Eileen, and I think I hear her say to somebody in an interview that Kong is forever looking for a family he will not find.
And this is all happening before the opening titles. The opening titles come, and we get the same titles we got from the last movie where everything's redacted by Monarch and they do the lines. And like I say, not a lot of opening credits, not a lot of names to put in there. And we're going to cut over to our other big monster, Godzilla, who's also having a creature attack.
Can I tell you how much I enjoy watching him curl up like a baby inside the Colosseum?
Best part of the film, Stuart. I agree. I loved it at the end when he went back to the Colosseum to crawl up to sleep in there. Just put a live streaming can on Sleeping Godzilla in the Colosseum. I will watch that for hours a day.
It reminded me of my dog curling up on a puppy bed. I just absolutely loved that myself.
And again, it brings back to my point that this Godzilla doesn't have any cute moments. They have chosen, since the 2014 movie, to make him menacing and all aggro all the time. So when we get a moment like this, it's just delightful that we can see another side to him. But yes, he is taking care of, again, thank you Wikipedia, Scylla, this giant crab monster that explodes in yellow goo when hit with fire breath.
But then we're going to be introduced to people. We have to. There's a Monarch observation post in Hollow Earth watching Kong, which is what we're going to be doing for most of the movie, watching Kong, not watching Godzilla.
Yeah. At first, I think I'm writing down names. I need to know these scientists. No, they'll all be dead after this scene. They're just here to be watching a spirograph. And something is spiking. And help me out with this plot point. Not that I want to spend too much time on the plot, but everything about this sound and the spiking whatever is just the Iwi people saying, help us.
Yeah, you guys are going to have to explain a lot of this stuff later when we get into gravity. I don't know what's going on, but my basic rudimentary understanding is that, yes, these Iwi people are scraping on some triangle-shaped crystals, and that's sending out triangle-shaped sound waves that this girl is having psychic visions of Gia.
If the writers understood what's going on, they're doing better than I am, but they're doing a piss poor job of communicating it. Because, yes, we're told later on these signals were the Iwi calling for help. How do the Iwi call for help? I think psychically. I don't think they're scraping on anything. I think it's their psychic powers causing these waves.
There's a lot of moving, like, giant crystals or something at the end of this. I don't know what's happening.
And who are they calling specifically? They want Gia?
I think they want Godzilla.
Yeah, I think they're calling Godzilla because they say, like, every time these major events from the other films we saw, this signal did go out. So I guess they could see that Titans are getting ready to attack and calling out Godzilla to save them, even though they're safe in Hollow Earth.
He is King of Monsters still, even though we have King Kong, and that was kind of a draw fight. I think Godzilla, he's had more movies. He's had more impact, I guess, in the series. So I guess you phone him. But I also heard that they need some Iwi from Skull Island to resurrect Mothra. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but they're a Mothra cult.
Yeah, they get to that later on. Only an Iwi from Skull Island can bring back Mothra. But what if the Iwi in Hollow Earth afraid of that they're sending out this signal? Are they afraid of Scar?
That's what I just said. They're safe in Hollow Earth. Why are they warning the surface world? Why do they care?
Scar has been down there for millennia. We're going to find hieroglyphics that tell the story of Scar.
Yes.
And so what is it? The Iwi communicate telepathically, but can they see the future? Can they see that Kong is going to go down where Scar is, and Scar is then going to find his way to the surface? I don't understand anything that comes to the Iwi in this movie.
Stuart, you brought up Transformers, and I'm going to say, anytime humans are trying to explain this film, I'm rolling out. I don't understand it. Psychic, weird, glowing triangle things. Okay, fine, whatever.
I agree. I'll help this movie a little. I think it might be related to the fact that Kong set a trap that opened up the floor. I don't know, or it just sank. For whatever reason, there's a big hole where there wasn't one before, and afterwards I hear the alarm. So maybe their alarms go off anytime this prison barrier gets punctured.
That was another thing that doesn't make sense, is like they make a big deal like, oh, we've unearthed this other part of Hollow Earth that we never discovered. But in the voiceover at the beginning, they're like, we've only discovered 5% of Hollowed Earth. That's all we've been able to map. You didn't have to have a secret compartment. Like, there's 95% of Hollow Earth they don't know about. Just have them living in a corner somewhere.
Yeah, but we need a reason why Scar hasn't come to the surface. Scar was imprisoned underneath this crust. So inside Hollow Earth is even Hollower Earth. And that's where Scar has been.
It's the Hollow Earth of Hollow Earth.
Where does Hollow Earth get its sunlight? This is a total aside, but when watching Godzilla vs. Kong, I got really bothered that there's daylight in Hollow Earth.
When there's mountains on both sides, you look up in the sky, there's no sun, there's just more mountains, yeah.
What I hear is, while it looks like its own universe with its own rules that don't apply to the surface world, it's all connected. So maybe they have sun because we have sun. I don't know. I look forward to reading the science.
And yet Scar is going to make a big deal when he gets to the surface to be blinded by the sun. I guess our sun is just way brighter. By the time that light gets to the Hollow Earth, it's been really diffused.
But anyway, let us talk about these human characters. There are less of them now. They've retained Gia, which I actually kind of rolled my eyes at last time. I thought, oh, what a silly conceit. But I actually think it is helpful to have a child connected. You want to make the main character a child. You really do want to put it on that level. Or at least if you're making a movie of this sophistication, you want to make Gia your star.
It would have been really funny to me if they brought back Eileen and didn't bring back Gia after Gia was such an important part of Eileen's life last time, if she just was gone. But I didn't re-listen to our last podcast, but I do think the last movie was the absolute worst take your daughter to work day ever, because that was so dangerous for Gia. And here, we're going to have a better reason for Gia to come along. First of all, Gia is 3 years older, and she looks like some puberty has hit. She's much taller. She comes across as more mature than she did in the last film. And it's less eye-rolling for me that she is going to be in the rest of this movie. But we've seen this before, right? She has a seizure in class and starts drawing pyramids. This is every cliche from every movie when somebody's having psychic visions forced upon them.
She's got The Shining.
Yeah, it's her people. A line gets dropped that she hasn't integrated well. I don't know how much time has passed between the last movie and this one, but yeah, obviously she's older. I'm presuming years.
They say years, that's it.
Yeah, she doesn't have friends. I think even her schoolwork is starting to dip. But maybe that's because they're sending out alarm signals that are causing her to have seizures.
Yeah, she's drawing mountains all over them.
Yes, exactly. Her tests are covered with spirograph dots that are corresponding with the information that is coming up from Hollow Earth. It will be her foster mom, Eileen, that sees the connection. But to the average teacher, she just looks like a problem student that isn't fitting in here at the Barbados Academy. And so, again, if there's a theme to this movie, it's a simple one. People that feel out of step with their world are going to forge a family.
Yeah, Kong is lonely at the beginning. They're going to set up very early that Gia and Eileen, mother and daughter issues, who is her family? That's going to be the big theme at the end. Who is she going to decide to stay with? It's very Pixar, Disney young child themes.
It's not even Pixar, because Pixar...
It's modern Pixar.
You might be talking about some of their lesser efforts.
Elemental. It's on that level.
When I think of a good Pixar movie, it's way heads and tails above this. I think you're right, Arnie. You're really tapping into what's going on here. We want to make this so simple that you don't even have to hear the dialogue. And that's why it just plays. You could take away all of the mother-daughter talking, and again, she's signing, so I guess you're reading a little bit. You have to be literate, maybe. But if you can't, if you're not missing anything. You understand what it is. Mom is worried about her daughter, so worried she's going to consult a, what, paranoid podcaster.
This is the most unbelievable thing in the movie. Giant apes, giant atomic lizards, I'll roll with all of it. But Eileen decides to go to Bernie for help? That is truly an unbelievable leap. You know what, though? The guy sitting next to me in the theater, every time Brian Tyree Henry spoke, this guy next to me chuckled. And he loved Brian Tyree Henry. So I guess whatever machinations and leaps of logic you have to go through to bring back comic relief, you go through to bring back this character who did nothing but basically shout in the last movie exclamations and fear to do it again.
Was I sitting next to you, Arnie? Because I feel like, yeah, Bernie was the times I was chuckling throughout this film, or thought about laughing at least. I recognized that he was the comic relief, and it was kind of working on me. Like, I thought the most unbelievable thing is he's this podcaster that no one believes, like, he saw all these things. I'm like, Alex Jones is very popular. Your conspiracy podcast would be doing fine.
Yeah, and it's also worth pointing out, last movie, he wasn't in Team Kong. He was on Team Godzilla. He was hanging out with Millie Bobby Brown. And so he doesn't even know this woman. They're meeting each other. I think maybe in the Hong Kong climax, they might have seen each other across the room as buildings were collapsing. But yeah, for the most part, they don't have a relationship. There's no reason to bring him along other than, I guess, he's cheap, right? He's cheap and he's funny. And yeah, Alexander Skarsgård wasn't very funny or very good in the part. Let's find a new equivalent for him. Dan Stevens, squint and they look about the same.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if Dan Stevens was in the last one or not. I get another character. I'm just kind of smiling every time he uses that Aussie accent.
Yeah, Dan Stevens is an actor who I've seen in stuff. He's been working for years, but I don't really know this guy from anything, so he just is Trapper for me.
The Guest. Watch The Guest.
Yeah, The Guest was great, and I stopped watching Downton Abbey after he died. He was in the good years of that show.
But here he is, coming in as an old boyfriend of Eileen's, who has become a Titan veterinarian, which has to be a very niche job that may not pay very well unless you're just on the Monarch payroll.
I think it's the opposite. It's so specialized that if you got to get a dentist, you're going to pay this guy whatever he asks, right? He's got to bring in a flying rig and hook up a pulley system and yank this thing out, make a metal version of the tooth to put in. They don't even show us all of it, but they show him having fun. They set it to I Gotcha by Greenflow. Yeah, you like this guy just because he enjoys his work so much. Sometimes they have these dumb characters and they want to, like, I was afraid that because he was kind of, at least seemingly, not very intelligent, that would be a lot of sparring between him and Eileen. You know, that's normally how it's played. And instead, they know each other from college. They had some kind of flirtation. They're not necessarily going to hook up again because we don't know if we want to ask this guy back for the sequel. But I like that he fits in here the way that he does. He's silly, he's fun, and he doesn't create any problems for anyone. So come along.
And they establish here that if Kong even comes to the surface, Godzilla's going to come for him because Godzilla's just looking for Titans. And I guess there's supposed to be some ticking clock here as they replace this tooth. We got to get Kong back in the hole before Godzilla gets here. He's on the move, but there's no tension to the scene if they're trying to sell that.
No, I do like some of the continuity. If you guys noticed, Kong has a whole bunch of scars on his chest, which were inflicted in that last movie. So they have that constant reminder that Godzilla really did kick Kong's ass in certain ways. You know, of course, it always neither one really wins because they teamed up against Mecha Godzilla, but Godzilla seemed like the more powerful Titan in that fight. And so that does give a little bit of a ticking clock. Here, I am silly enough to think from the title, these two are going to team up early on. We're getting to the end of Act 1, and I think Godzilla is going to come because this movie is about the two of them together.
Yeah, is that a mistake? It's worth asking, because I definitely think that in all the trailers that I saw, the idea was that they were going to all be augmented and friends, all living in the Hollow Earth. So the idea that Godzilla stays on the surface and is, yeah, still a predator of Titans and not hanging out with Kong, they still have a beef, it was a surprise.
I mean, I figured because this was a Godzilla-Kong film, whatever that consonant is between their names, that they got to fight at least once. And I thought that would happen end of the first act, beginning of the second act, not in the third act.
Yeah, here. You could do it right here, that he comes for him while he's got under anesthesia for the tooth and all of that. Maybe you make him be the one that knocks the tooth out. I don't know. But you give them a fight early. That seems like Rocky formula.
There definitely needed to be more Godzilla action in this film is one of my final thoughts walking out, is to give Godzilla top billing, especially again coming after Godzilla Minus One when there's probably more Godzilla fans than usual, and they're going to walk out very disappointed if you're here for the lizard action.
Yeah, it needs to be with Kong, too. I mean, don't give me some nameless crab. Don't have him, you know, go eat a power plant in France. I mean, that, it just feels like filler. That just tells me you don't have anything for him to do with Kong.
But Kong is going to go back. Our five human characters, there's one we didn't mention, a pilot who doesn't really matter. I don't even know the pilot's name.
He's going to get eaten very quick.
And can we talk about the needle drops in this film? Because Trapper is going to play Twilight Zone by Golden Earring. Later on, we're going to get some Kiss. We're going to get some Loverboy. What is up with the soundtrack of this movie?
It feels kind of Guardians and yet less popular tracks. I kind of appreciate it. They're a little bit more party rock, 80s, I guess, in vibe.
Yeah, but I Was Made for Loving You was Kisco. It was Kiss's disco track.
Yeah, that's when they wanted to be disco.
It is. They're all like late 70s, early 80s kind of rockin' disco vibe, whereas Guardians tended to be a little bit more bubblegum pop. I'm splitting hairs here. It's the same instinct. We want to have a bouncy soundtrack that's ironic, that shows you while all of this mass destruction is going on, that is fun, that you should be smiling. And that was not the instinct of Godzilla 2014. I want to just remind you how far we've come since they set up this universe. This is still directed by the guy that did the movie last time. And I think they're not ever going back to Gareth Edwards.
They're not trying to do scary Godzilla films.
Yeah, now that Kong is here, there's no way to make it as foreboding. But yeah, Mikhail is the guy you're talking about. He is just the angry pilot, red shirt, that's here just to give us a little bit of death. You know, they get down there, confirm that the station that gave them the original stats has been crushed by something unknown. There was a big eye, and somehow someone recognized it was an ape eye. I thought we'd get some other kind of creature. I didn't realize it was going to be like an evil King Kong villain.
Oh, I saw that trailer. I knew there was a baby Kong, which led me to believe there would be other Kongs as well. I just found this weird because, yeah, we see this station get destroyed by something early on. But then when this crew gets there, they seem very surprised. Like, they thought they were going to be up and running. They only went there because they saw smoke. It wasn't because they got a distress signal. I thought you would have known about one of your stations going down in Hollowed Earth.
And you wouldn't send, like, the head of the program down there.
In a child.
Look, I know that we can pick so many nits about this, and yet I have no inclination to do so because of the way that it's being directed, the way the story is being told, and because it is visually very satisfying. If you're going to cut costs, they've spent money in the right way. When we fly into Hollow Earth, I still think it's a grandiose vision.
It is good visuals. I can't argue against that. It's not great visuals. It's good visuals. I never suspend disbelief. I always realize what I'm looking at is an artifice. Unlike, say, the Planet of the Apes movie we're going to be reviewing coming up, where they convince me that those are talking apes because they look so damn real with their hair and everything. Here, it's pretty. It would look great if you took a freeze frame and put it on a wall, but it is artificial looking.
Yeah, this is not Jurassic Park. I could see the CGI lines being drawn onto these animals. Like, it's not the most convincing thing, but it's the right, like you're saying, Stuart, the right instinct to stay in Hollowed Earth where you're getting weird dinosaurs and weird creatures. That's what I want to see. I got excited when we went to Hollowed Earth in the last film. So, yeah, it's not the most convincing CG. It's cartoony looking, but it's appropriate for this film.
And I feel like we get just enough human drama of, like, mom's worried about daughter, and they're going to find this Iwi village, and is she going to want to stay there? If you want to pay attention to that, it's there. But what I appreciate is, for the most part, we're just going to go and stay with Kong. And that this movie is more interested in Kong than the humans or Godzilla is not a problem, because he has always been MonsterVerse's best asset.
And we're going to get a pretty long English-less sequence here as Kong explores that hole that he discovered and, yeah, find those other apes and have a whole interaction with them. It goes on for quite a bit.
If we're not going to get Godzilla versus Kong action, we're going to get Kong versus Kong action as they find some other apes and the apes don't like this outsider. And I guess they're not Kongs. They're just all apes. I kept calling them all Kongs, but they're just giant apes that live underground.
Yeah, Kong looks like a gorilla. Some of these look like chimpanzees. Scar kind of looks like a gibbon. He has very long limbs. So they've gone with different designs for these other apes.
Yeah, but I figure you make this little Suko with his big old eyes, they're going to play into the cute. This is something that could definitely have gone wrong. Now that Gia's a little too old for it, we want to give him a little child companion that's going to look at him with these big sad eyes. By the end of this fight, he is taking that ape and using it as a weapon. He is beating other apes with the little monkey.
I could not believe that.
I loved that.
Suko should be dead from those beatings Kong uses him for.
Yes, because Suko bites his finger and is fighting against him. He grabs Suko, uses him as a club to club three apes, and then tosses him at one of the apes. It's great.
Yeah, that's a very satisfying way. In case, maybe this is the PG-13-ishness of all of this. In case you thought that this was too kiddie, what I would say is you need to be a child at heart. You need, as an adult, to get into the mindset of a child, but it is not so juvenile that you feel like you're watching Teletubbies or something cutesy. They haven't taken away. Kong is a fierce fighter. I mean, when he's pounding on his chest and gnashing his teeth, it is still very intimidating.
They still try to make him a good guy. He kicks one of these apes off a cliff and grabs his hand and is like, look, we can be friends. I'll pull you back up. And the ape whose life he saved grabs a rock blade, tries to stab Kong, and Kong's like, all right, if you're going to be like that, screw you. Kicks him off the cliff.
And when we see Scar emerge and, like, finally appear, he's going to kick another ape into the hot lava because they just got hot lava around him, because that's an awesome thing to have around you in your lair. But that's like Suko's either mom or dad, right? Like Suko seems to get very upset by that. I don't know who that ape was, but that was my reading based on the response. That's why Suko's going to turn on Scar.
I think what we're to realize is a lot of these apes are aggressive towards Kong just because they're made to be aggressive. We see even Suko, he's got another plot. We have this wordless understanding. Kong is like, take me to where you're from. There's one guy that gets away. He throws a rock and hits him, but he scampers off. You take me to where he's going. Suko leads him to his death. They go to a lake. You can tell from just the expression on his face, is the creature coming yet? I need to get out of here as soon as the sea serpent of this lake emerges.
I love that. You just can't trust Suko. And that Suko, even Kong seems a little suspect after Suko did the attack, but Suko leads him to wash off the blood again and take a bath. And then, yeah, this serpent attacks. Suko's out of there, leaving Kong to drown. I like that you can't trust Suko here. When Suko just becomes the buddy, it's less interesting to me than mischievous Suko.
But you understand it, because once we do get to that quarry you're talking about, these people have been made to be aggressive. They wouldn't normally be, but yeah, they're not allowed to be in loving parental relationships. Yeah, some relation, mom, dad, brother, something of Suko is made to be moving big, heavy rocks and is not allowed to nurture him. And, you know, theme of the movie, you want to have that connection. It's why everyone here is so aggressive. They're afraid of the whip.
Yeah, you see it when Scar comes out. And I gotta say, like, a whip made from, like, a giant snake spine? Awesome. That's what I'm coming to this film for. But when he comes out, we'll see him inspect that fake tooth in Kong. And again, it's just another nice little simple signal. Oh, you're something different. Maybe you have another family. One of the themes, again, which side are you going to go with? Nurture or nature? And it's a nice little moment where Scar's like, oh, you're different from us. I don't think they understand it's from humans, but they know it's artificial.
Yeah, no, I like the tooth bit because it'll come back at the end. But right here, it's a reason to ridicule Kong. You don't have all your teeth. And yeah, you look foolish. And yeah, we can take you. And if I can't beat you, I've got something behind the lava that can.
Which is, of course, cheating. I was thinking about the first Black Panther film when all the apes get together and start chanting, and it's Scar versus Kong in there. That reminded me of the Black Panther fight against M'Baku to see who was going to be the ruler of Wakanda. And I was like, okay, this is an honorable fight. But when Scar starts to lose, at the end of that whip, there's this crystal that is basically a remote control. He can control the ice giant's exact actions.
With pain somehow. That's what we're told. He controls him with pain. Sure.
It may or may not be connected to the quartz. When we cut back, the scene is interspersed with the human characters. They've actually met an Iwi queen who is, don't do it in dialogue, pour some paint in a cup that overflows and it'll fill up pictures in the floor, and we'll see in pictograms what's all happening here. We understand the story of how Godzilla, also known as the monster that ate the star, imprisoned these apes in this underground.
I appreciate that we're going to get some hieroglyphics, make it very simple. I don't understand, like, all the Goonies booby trap, like, yeah, we're going to figure out to push this button to fill up this water, which is going to lead us to this, I don't know, hidden camouflaged gate to the Iwi village that we got to climb through. Like, just find it. Like, just get there. Like, yeah, this is almost 2 hours, and I don't need my cartoons to be this long.
But they do kill off the pilot. I have to laugh because the actor playing the pilot, his last name is Ferns, and he's eaten by a plant.
Maybe intentional. Maybe they came up with that on the spot for that reason. Who knows? But yes, he was going to be dead meat. We have to have someone to kill. And they're not going to risk killing a major character. They're not going to take out Brian Tyree Henry. There's no way. Comic relief has a purpose. Yeah, I feel like, again, the one drama that they're giving us is that foster mom fears. She's worried that her daughter didn't have a connection to her world. Now that she's actually found her people, is Eileen going to have a role? Will this child leave her, leave the nest early? Good enough. I feel like the last movies would probably spend about 30 minutes on these conflicts. You watch that Godzilla 2014, and there is so much about Aaron Taylor Johnson being the son of Bryan Cranston and losing his mom. And we just don't need all of that hand-wringing and psychodrama.
And I appreciate that there's themes in here. Like, show a little ambition to appease us adults. Have some themes. But yeah, don't spend most of the running time on that. Give us a couple of minutes here. I get it. Like, this is about family. This is a Fast and Furious sequel, basically. Who's going to go with who? And, like, they spend the right amount of time on it. It's very simple, to the point. And I appreciate that they get to the themes and that they get to them fast and deal with them with as much seriousness as you should in this film.
Yeah, I agree. It's directed well, is what I would say. And I didn't feel that about the last movie. The last movie felt excessively long and weighted by teams of characters. We had a human Kong team. We had a human Godzilla team. It was like an hour before Kong met Godzilla. And here, yeah, we're at the hour mark and we've had several satisfying battles. Does Godzilla need a Godzuki? The one thing you might ask is, if everyone is telling the themes of family, why doesn't Godzilla have a storyline like that?
Why doesn't Godzilla have a storyline? Period.
I mean, he's got a storyline. He's got a binge on nuclear power. Like, that is his storyline. Where can I find the next hit of nuclear power to suck up?
He can understand the warning to know that he has to be tougher than he's ever been in order to fight Scar King.
And Stuart, you talk about satisfying battles, but Godzilla doesn't even get that. When he destroys the French nuclear power plant, we come to that in the middle of it. He's already destroyed the nuclear power plant and he's just feeding on it. Then he's going to go kill a Titan called Tiamat. And that fight is so brief. And one atomic blast we don't even see, and Tiamat floats up to the top of the water in chunks. I'm like, this could have been a really cool Godzilla battle, but they're not going to give us that.
Yeah, and what's crazy is then he's just going to sleep in whatever that Titan's name is, like sleep in their nest? I don't know, wherever he gets that solar energy, and he's just going to suck up all that solar energy until the climax of this film. Like, it's so bizarre when he just shows up in Gibraltar later on. Like, I'm like, oh, I guess he woke up. You're just not going to show us that. He's just there.
Yeah, he saw Barbie last year and decided to go pink.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that touch. I will say this. As much as I want to be in Hollow Earth, it is a big facet of any Godzilla movie that he destroys cities. And so that's, I guess, what he's giving you. We've seen him walk through cities that don't normally be attacked. Go to France, you expect them to knock over the Eiffel Tower. They don't go there. They go to like wine country and a nuclear power plant. And yeah, the Arctic Circle. They have a nameless, anonymous crew of a submarine that would probably be played by actors we know if they had 50 more in the budget. And instead, yeah, it's just enough to keep Godzilla in your frame of reference. You know what he's doing, even though it doesn't feel like he's helping the main storyline very much.
What I like about when we cut away to Godzilla is I feel like in Hollowed Earth, and yes, we'll get some comparisons with giant apes next to little humans, but I feel like most of the Hollowed Earth stuff, I lose a sense of scale with these titans. So it's always nice to cut back to Godzilla every once in a while. I'm like, okay, these are giant, scary monsters and not just a bunch of Planet of the Apes apes hanging out in a cave.
Yeah, when Godzilla's destroying Rome, he's not even trying to destroy Rome. He's just walking through Rome, and that's enough to destroy it. And you have to wonder how humans have just come to accept this, and why Godzilla always goes to tourist destinations. With the exception of France, he's always going to places you want to see. He's never going to, like, Montana.
You got to get that monster insurance that Bernie's selling on his podcast. I thought that was a funny little detail. Get your Godzilla insurance.
But you talked about the humans on the submarine, Stuart, and I had to wonder, when I was watching this, was I missing something because I didn't watch Monarch? Is there any crossover with Monarch here, or any characters?
Not at all.
Like, this Titan isn't a big monster that they spent an episode on or something?
No. It wouldn't matter if it did, though, right? Even if it did, so what? There's a connection? Is there a real emotional connection? No. That show is basically Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. pretending that the superhero battles are happening just off screen. It was largely referencing the 2014 movie, is what that show largely was connected to. They'd cut back and see Godzilla attacking San Francisco. Everything was about that battle. But yes, this is new territory, and I don't think the writers here had any involvement on the Monarch show. So Kong gets away with the help of Zuko. He retreats from the Shimo fight damaged. He got his arm frostbit. Those that saw the trailer know exactly what he's going to do.
You thought it was Transformers, you said.
I did. I thought that was Bumblebee every time I saw the trailer.
It was like Beast Wars 2.
I was afraid they were going to do too much of it. Honestly, I imagined him like in a whole suit of armor and firing lasers, and Godzilla would, you know, like fly into space in a rocket. You know, you could go that way, and maybe they will. Maybe the solution, the toyetic idea, is to give them more and more tech. But here, I think it's just enough that he has a frostbit hand, and they have a means. The dentist, for whatever reason, knows how to attach the metal hand.
Yeah, I do love Trapper, and I think he helps sell a lot of the silliness of this film. The fact that he just looks at Kong, he's like, yeah, he's got frostbite on that arm. I'm like, maybe vets don't have the same standards to diagnose things. But then, yeah, he's just going to go to an armory and fly this arm out. Like, he's a pilot, he's a vet, he's just a cool Australian guy, and put that arm on, or that hand, that metal gauntlet onto Kong.
What do you mean he just looks at it? The dude has a tricorder. I don't understand. You know, in all of this fake tech, what pulls me out of it is he has a device that he just points at Kong and is like, oh no, it's frostbite.
One would think that they'd have to amputate, but again, that would be too scary for kids.
Yeah, you don't do Luke Skywalker here with a robot hand.
Right. You could go that way, and I feel like there probably would have been directors that would have had that impulse to be a little bit more gross. I feel like this movie has been kind of gross sometimes. Again, the fights don't pull punches. I feel like kids are going to be frightened watching these monsters fight, but it doesn't have any long-term consequences. If the fight ended with King Kong having his hand cut off, that would probably be too much. The fact that they can just slap on a power glove and he's punching away is the right choice for this age demographic they're targeting.
Not just that, but you don't want future movies in the franchise to have one-armed Kong.
Why not?
I think it would just take away from the character too much.
He's going to become Mecha Kong throughout the series.
Yeah.
Again, I feared this was the movie that would do that, actually. But I figure if they make more, they're going to have to come up with something, right?
I don't know. They're titans. They live forever.
I'm just saying he'll have more devices.
I hope not. I think, as you called it, the power glove is just enough.
I don't want him to become James Bond with an explosive pen.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for him to go to space. You know, the Monster X from space. I know it's coming. But yes, they've destroyed everything, including Cairo. We do have the idea that we need Godzilla here. That it is not enough to have Kong with a metal hand. So he is going to lure the lizard down.
Yeah, it's been, established, at least this is my reading from the film, is that there's only one portal to the surface in mainland Hollowed Earth, but in this special section, there's all these portals, we'll see. So they could go to different areas and get back to the surface.
No, there's more portals even in main Hollow Earth, because I was thinking about this. In the last movie, remember they had to go to like Antarctica to get to Hollow Earth, and they had all of that? But in this one, there's an access point in Barbados. And so it's like there's definitely multiple ways to get down there. I don't know why they had to go to Antarctica last time unless they just found these after getting to Hollow Earth. But yeah, this one pops up in Cairo. We get Kong versus Godzilla finally, even though this is not the Kong versus Godzilla. This is the Kong X Godzilla movie, Godzilla X Kong. And hope you saw the pyramids, because they're going to be destroyed after this.
I was wondering, do they fight here? Because those pyramids look like the pyramid radio waves. Like, I was trying to draw connections, but I don't think there's connections to be drawn.
You got the connection.
It's that simple?
Yeah, there are crystal pyramids down below, and so where can we go where there are pyramids above? And again, it is a feature of any kaiju movie that you want to see recognizable landmarks destroyed by the monsters.
Yeah, they made this big deal about Hollowed Earth and Earth like being connected. Like there's some connection. I don't ever see that, but that's how I took these pyramids. And yeah, I just do want to see them destroyed. Like if you're going to have giant monsters, break the really famous stuff that humans have built that's large.
And because we want Gia to be the main human character, we're going to establish that she has the power. For whatever reason, I guess she was on Skull Island, and that makes her more special than even the Iwi Queen. She can awaken Mothra. This is a temple devoted to Mothra, but nobody has the power to do that until she arrives. And so she can fly in with the moth and sit on the Sphinx and act as referee, basically, while these guys fight.
I really hoped she was going to become like the Mothra twins, if you remember them from the old Toho movies that were singing and things.
I love the Mothra lore, yeah.
They were in briefly. There was a reference to them in the last movie, but
they don't emerge, though.
They haven't used them. Again, why not? Maybe it's considered too silly.
Did you see this movie?
Yeah. No, they should definitely have little girls in a clamshell singing. That should happen.
But Mothra is going to come up and referee the fight or get them to squash the beef by roaring at them and take Gia with her. Gia's going to get right in Godzilla's face, which doesn't seem like a smart choice. But because Mothra is there, Gia is safe. And now we're going to get my favorite image of the film. Godzilla and Kong are going to team up, go to Hollow Earth. King Kong is going to ride Godzilla, and I love it.
Yeah, because you've established that Scar is riding that ice-breathing dragon. I'm like, oh, cool. And then, yeah, you get that similarity with Scar and that ice monster chasing towards them. And then, yeah, Kong jumps onto Godzilla, and like they jump and the two apes attack each other, the two lizards attack each other. Like, cool cartoon drawings. Like, I'm loving this. I am a kid at this point, and this is fun.
It's all about the battles. Let's just be really clear. If you don't want to see destruction on a massive scale, there is nothing here for you. This has all been about team-ups and what can happen when, yeah, certain monsters fight each other or when a human gets the ingenuity. I think at one point, Dan Stevens, he's like, I've got an idea for getting new recruits, and they were flying earlier with some fake pterodactyl things, and he brings them into there.
That shoot electricity.
Yeah, why not? You know, like, this is the point. And if you don't like that, I don't know that there is anything here for you.
Yeah, because here's the thing. There's all this talk about gravity and manipulating it. I don't understand any of that. But when gravity's being manipulated and they're jumping on rocks and floating and all that's like, I'm like, this is great. I don't understand how we got here, but I'm loving the action.
I agree. I can't follow any of the whys. And that is a problem for me. You know, I don't want to come off as a lover of this movie. I think I've been very positive, but the lack of coherence around what I'm seeing, the lack of a coherent why, is bugging the hell out of me.
And yet, I would say, and it probably has to do with the editing choices, the direction, it doesn't have baziness. It doesn't feel so scattered that I'm screaming, stop, slow down, and tell me what's going on. I'm more or less riding the ride and getting what's going on. And when I don't understand something like two pyramids on, you know, ceiling and floor coming together to create zero gravity, well, I get why they're doing it. But they want this to be fun, and that's fun watching kaiju float around in zero gravity punching each other.
I also want more Mothra. We're told by the humans that Mothra is going to guard the portals while the other animals fight, but Mothra gets one moment here. The humans get in their hovercraft ship and try to fly, and with the zero gravity, they almost crash, and Mothra is the smartest and most human-loving kaiju ever, because she's going to grab that hovercraft and make sure it's gently put down right side up on a cliff. But I would have liked a bit more Mothra in this fight.
Eh, who likes Mothra?
I love Mothra. Go back, watch that original Mothra film. I'm kind of with you, Arnie, because I just have a personal preference for that kaiju. But yeah, they don't do a whole lot with her. So I'm like, happy that she shows up. She doesn't, like, get in the fight. She doesn't get to turn into worms like in those original ones that spit webs out at Godzilla. None of that fun stuff happens.
My other question for you guys, is Scar a bad enough villain for this movie? I mean, I knew just coming into this movie that it would be Godzilla and Kong versus some new enemy. And I thought this new enemy would have to be so powerful that that's why it took the two to team up. Scar, just because he has Shimo, does not seem like the worthwhile adversary for this. I'm enjoying the fight, but this feels like it should be the middle of the movie fight, not the climactic battle at the end.
Well, they change locations and go to Rio. That's why it's climactic. We've been told Shimo created the Ice Age and now is going to do it again by blasting hot Rio into a frozen empire.
Wait, is this Frozen Empire?
Yeah, right. I know. We just covered.
Is that the new empire? It's the frozen one?
I think they do a better job than, yeah, Garaka or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I did see the similarities as I'm watching this. I'm like, I like this more. Like, fewer humans, fewer just characters. And yeah, I love when we get to Rio. I guess, I don't know, you can't knock down the Jesus statue. I thought that was going to happen for sure. But yeah, you're going to get this fight, and I'm glad when we get to the cities. Because again, in Hollowed Earth, it's hard to really get their scale when you get to human cities. I'm like, oh, Suko is actually very large, even for a baby ape.
Yeah, you don't knock down the Jesus statue on Good Friday. I mean, come on.
I would, but I have questionable taste.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's not what a Hollywood film is going to put out on Easter weekend.
Not unless it gets rebuilt 3 days later.
But to answer your question, Arnie, I think what they do, it's not that they need two against one. It's they each have a foe. We have an evil Kong for Kong, and we have, what are they called? A guardian. Anything that's a lizard that's fire-breathing, I think it's called a guardian. So it's a evil Godzilla versus Godzilla. And so it's supposed to be evenly matched in that way. And it's almost two different movies, two different battles. We don't have the same feeling about Shimo, because she's under mind control. I guess the difference is, as soon as that crystal gets crushed by Suko, we see them as an ally.
Because Shimo doesn't die, right? Shimo just goes back to Shimo's cave.
Yeah, Shimo isn't a bad guy. Shimo is just being controlled through that pain, and Zuko saves Shimo, and now Shimo is actually the one who's going to go after Scar.
Yeah, I love this resolution. After he knocks out his tooth, which is very satisfying, Kong's like, you gonna laugh at my tooth? I'm gonna knock your tooth out.
Yes, I love that.
Then, yeah, Shimo, I think, deserves the kill shot. Deserves, you've enslaved me for all of this time. I'm gonna give you my Arctic Blast. And then Kong is just gonna take that and shatter it. Like, that's his cool finishing move. I agree with you. I don't feel like this villain is particularly scary. It isn't intimidating. I mean, I didn't know who it was coming in there. And usually they go to classic characters. We've had Ghidra or something like that. We've seen Mechagodzilla. They could go into that zone and pull out another one. But I don't know who Shimo is, and not very scary. And works better as the friendly thing they're riding home than as a big bad.
And I just feel this movie lacks stakes. Yes, I know Shimo breathes into the air and blocks out the sun in Rio.
I got that it was doing that too, but what's the repercussions of that? It snows over that part of the ocean? It made that cloud?
Yeah, it didn't feel like this was the super climactic battle that Godzilla had to save us from and team up with his enemy in order to defeat. It wasn't the enemy of my enemy is my friend or any of that. It was just Mothra had us hug it out, and now we're going to fight these two. It was a fun fight. I'm not going to completely diss it. I'm just going to say it wasn't as big as I hoped.
Yeah, and so what I would say is, if you're a studio executive, let's play that game, and your director is asking you, we need to make this fight bigger. We want to have them hop through portals and freeze all the major cities all over the world, but it's going to cost you $20 million more. Do you do it?
I mean, I was surprised because I sat through all these credits. I think I was the first one to see this. So, like, that person always has to let everyone else know if there's mid-credits or post-credit scenes. So I sat through all these credits, and there's a lot of location shooting. Like, I couldn't believe all the different units. Gibraltar, they went there. I'm like, oh, I thought that was a CGI shot of Godzilla standing on a rock. Like, it seems like they traveled around to film a lot of this stuff. Yeah, could you have done this in the studio so you could have saved that money for a bigger climax?
But my point is, you could go all over the Earth and make it global stakes. You could have the whole Earth turning into an ice age, which is, I think, what we're supposed to get in Microcosm in Rio, when we see the tidal wave turns frozen and all that. We're to understand that eventually that will get to us. But because this is a modestly budgeted movie, again, $130 million.
For this kind of film is not a lot.
Yeah, it's about $50 million cheaper than anything we've seen before. Yes, they could have gone bigger, but you get the point. I don't know that I would have had way more excitement having seen more visuals and more flash. You know, this movie is pretty modest as an entertainment. So they could have gone bigger. Without a doubt, Arnie, they could have gone bigger. I don't know that I would have cared anymore.
But yeah, Scar gets shattered and Godzilla returns to the Colosseum for that cute visual. Whereas Kong goes back to Hollow Earth, where he's riding Shimo, and Zuko is on his shoulder, which is, again, a cute image. I love Zuko. Zuko just is a very cute baby Kong.
Cute, but also ferocious, and done in parallel, it should be said, with Gia. Gia makes that choice to be with Eileen, so we're to understand both adoptive families are going to live apart, but probably call each other should a sequel be necessary.
So Jacob, Stewart, do you recommend Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire? Jacob.
You know, I went to this one by myself. No one really wanted to go see this one with me. So I go and see it. And then I just text my wife. I'm like, hey, headed home. Movie's over. And she goes, how was it? I'm like, frivolous fun. I hope I remember all the plot points by the time we do the podcast, because I feel like that is this film. You'll enjoy it, I think, watching big apes and lizards fight each other, and then good luck recalling it, because it doesn't matter, but it's entertaining. Yes, there's nothing deep here. There's some themes about family to make this feel like something, like a movie should have themes, but you come to see Godzilla X Kong so Kong could ride Godzilla to fight another giant ape riding an ice dragon. Like, does that sound cool to you? Then yes, this movie is a recommend. There's nothing here revolutionary. And you know what? We do have serious Godzilla films. If this sounds too frivolous for you, go see Godzilla Minus One. Go see Shin Godzilla about bureaucracy. Like, that's the great thing about Godzilla, that they've shown you could do different things with this creature. And I do think if you watch the Toho era of Godzilla, the first 20 or so films, they get into this territory pretty fast, and I enjoy all those. This is a version of Godzilla. I'm saying Godzilla. This is mostly a Kong film, but of a kaiju film. Like, yeah, you could have a silly kid-centric kaiju film, and it still works. This one works for me because of the fun visuals, all the monster stuff. Reduce the humans. Yeah, show me that monsters just growling at each other, but like debating politics, like in their minds or something, with Scar and Godzilla and Suko and the hot lava. All, like, I really enjoyed those sequences just for being something different and trying to lean into the monster side of the monster verse. So again, not a very important movie. You probably won't remember it the next day after you see it, but it's entertaining. Like, if you want to go see it, yeah, go see this one. It's a real mild recommend, but I had a good time during a lot of the cartoonish action sequences throughout.
Compared to how you've been during the show, I'm surprised it's a mild recommend. You've seemed pretty up on the monster action.
Yeah, that's a thing, but it's still like a silly movie, and I got really bored during parts when I didn't understand like all the gravity. I'm like, okay, just get back to the fighting. I don't know why you're saying all this stuff. It doesn't make sense.
Stuart.
Yeah, as the adult me, the math doesn't work out. You can take Kong. I'm taking it as a multiplication sign. You can take Kong and multiply him with Godzilla to get a new empire that isn't worth half of Godzilla minus one. But in terms of addition, this is a good addition to MonsterVerse. They have made the right choices. They have improved this series. They have made the installment that feels closest to the kind of Godzilla movie I saw and loved when I was 10 years old.
That's what I'm saying. Those early Godzilla films, this feels like that.
Yeah, if 10-year-old me saw that 2014 Godzilla, I would not have the same affection for Godzilla that I do having watched those ones from the 60s. And we reviewed that Kong versus Godzilla from the 60s. This is very much in that spirit. And I think that's what you want to do. You want to make it simple. Just make it simple. Don't weigh things down with the large cast of human characters and their boring, sad problems. Give us one family with a simple problem that can be solved by titans beating each other. And yes, it's an uneven fight. I will say that Kong remains their star player. I like the hand augmentation. They didn't do too much with that, but they've given him the kid now. That could have been too cutesy. And Suko is cute, but like, he's also throwing him around at certain points. Bad parenting. I don't feel like this is so cutesy that you can't enjoy this as an adult. You just have to be in the mindset that you're doing something juvenile. They could work on Godzilla. Again, I will repeat, if they just went back and made a Godzilla-centric film, I don't think I'd recommend it. Those are the problematic movies in the MonsterVerse. He's overpowered and he's impersonal. But when he curls up in the Colosseum, I love it. Go in that direction next time and you could fix this. Mothra, I didn't think anybody cared. So like a non-factor here, but it's a movie of simple pleasures and big explosions, just as it should be. And everything that I could nitpick, I have no inclination to do so. I'm just going to say, if you liked the recent Meg film, it reminded me a lot of that. It's that kind of movie. It's a mild recommend.
And I'm really ambivalent about this film, and I'd like to talk to Arnie in 2027 and say whenever they come out with the next Godzilla versus Kong film, you don't need to go back and rewatch this one. This one does not have vital plot points that you're going to need in order to understand the next film. This film is inconsequential. I think Godzilla versus Kong, it set up Hollow Earth, it set up a number of other things that were important to understand this film. I wouldn't necessarily want to go into this film without knowing what Hollow Earth is from the last one and all of that. And that's how I feel about this film. I'm not going to remember this film in 2027 is why I have to tell myself that. This is a completely inconsequential film, but I think it's part of the definition of popcorn entertainment. I had popcorn during this film, and the popcorn doesn't stay with you. This film doesn't stay with you. But yeah, I enjoyed watching monsters beat each other with good CGI. I enjoyed that they didn't spend much time on the humans because I didn't care. Every time you went back to talk about Jira Stewart in this podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, there are humans in this film. I keep forgetting that. And I think that is the right instinct, is to focus on the monsters. Like you guys, it's a weak recommend. I had to really think about whether I was recommending it because it is such an inconsequential film. And I had an okay time. I didn't jump up in my seat. In the end, I was like, yeah, it was an entertaining enough movie. But if you don't want to see a bunch of CGI monsters punch each other, skip it. But I enjoyed it enough to say weak recommend.
The problem is it comes on the heels of Godzilla Minus One, which I saw twice in theaters. I really like that film, so I know how good a really good Godzilla movie can be. And so to watch this, yeah, it is just, it's a mild experience, but it should be discounted. Again, I had an affection for Godzilla as a child because he made 30 films that all feel like this and are all forgettable. I don't even remember the names and who he fought, but I remember the good vibes, and this movie has good vibes.
Yeah, he teams up like a Power Ranger that could grow to kaiju size in one of those films. They're crazy. Look, I can enjoy Adam West as Batman and Christian Bale as Batman as directed by Christopher Nolan. Very different Batmans. I can enjoy those, and I do feel like Godzilla can work a similar way. I've liked him in serious Godzilla films and very silly ones as well, and he works both times.
Yeah, so maybe it's not such a mild recommend. It's just I'm ambivalent about MonsterVerse.
You're just coming off of Minus One.
That's the truth is, I'm also really cold on this whole MonsterVerse. Every time they come out with another one, I'm like, really?
There's only one I like. There's only one I genuinely like, and it's Skull Island. That is the good one. That one I would watch at any time, and I just enjoy almost every scene and every character in it. And then this one is two. This one is a good, affable time. The rest of them, probably Godzilla 2014, then King of Monsters, then that last Godzilla vs. Kong. I really didn't like that one, except for the boat fight.
You've recommended it.
I barely. Go listen to the review. I said, I recommend it, now let's never talk about it again. And Monarch is a don't bother.
I agree with Skull Island. I would actually go Godzilla v. Kong for my number two, and then this for my number three, 2014. And then, yeah, my not recommend for King of the Monsters. Not a king of a film.
And I don't even remember this franchise well enough to rank them again without having rewatched all of them. And I just didn't feel like doing that because I'm not a huge fan of this series. But I've enjoyed them well enough. My memory is really not liking that Godzilla 2014. My memory is that one left me the coldest because it just, those mudos didn't have any name recognition and didn't mean anything to me.
What I can say about all of them is they do have great battles. There are great poster shots in all of them. If you're there just for the fighting, they're probably all worth seeing. Just have the fast forward button at hand.
Whenever a human comes on the screen, fast forward.
Those dramas really do weigh down those Godzilla movies. And here, again, pare it down, make it simple. No one misses Billy Bobby Brown. Nobody misses Alexander Skarsgård in this movie.
Didn't even remember him.
Right, exactly. The people that matter are here, and they're all monsters, and they give good performances, and their drama is enough. But if you do want human drama in Japan, then maybe you should join us this Friday. April patrons are going to be treated to one of the most successful anime films of all time called Your Name.
Animated humans. But humans nonetheless.
Right. In time for this whole solar eclipse. I didn't plan it this way, but weirdly enough, we're having a cosmic event not unlike the movie. I hope it goes better for me.
Yeah, it's going to be bad if it ends up like this movie.
Although some fun gender bending before we get there.
Yes.
And then next week, you guys start a race towards Furiosa with some car race carnage.
I can't believe how long this franchise is. I was like, yeah, let's throw Death Race in with a whole bunch of car movies. But Death Race is six car movies. And that will pretty much take us all the way straight to the end of May, where we are going to get some Mad Max. It's kind of like a Mad Max universe, so to speak. It'll tide you over while you wait for Furiosa. Done with a fraction of the budget, I should say. But yeah, this first one, you'll be surprised. It's got Kill Bill and an early performance by Sylvester Stallone in it. So check it out.
And Martin Cove if you're a Cobra Kai fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you will be able to recognize throughout the series special individuals. And yeah, hopefully there's some good surprises along the way.
So race back to nowplayingpodcast.com next Tuesday for that review. Thank you for listening to this review. We really appreciate you guys tuning in and your patronage so that you can listen to your name this Friday. And Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me. Until next time, long live the king.
This alpha predator of yours, Doctor. Do you really think he has a chance?
The arrogance of man is thinking nature is in our control, and not the other way around.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed the show.
Long live the king.
Want more reviews like this one? In the archives section of NowPlayingPodcast.com, you'll find more than 1,000 in-depth movie reviews for every installment in the world's biggest film franchises, including the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Wars, Spider-Man, Batman, X-Men, James Bond, Middle-Earth, Jurassic Park, Fast and Furious, and Transformers. And come back to NowPlayingPodcast.com next Tuesday for another all-new movie review podcast.
You are gonna come back to me.
Need more Now Playing? Subscribe to our In Focus weekly newsletter for exclusive digital download giveaways, celebrity interviews, behind-the-scenes insights, and more. Sign up through the subscribe page on our website and get it delivered to your inbox every Friday.
Why would they want just this one when they've got the keys to your entire magic kingdom of horrors back here?
Support from listeners like you help keep Now Playing operating.
Come on, you're scaring me.
You can find the link to donate using PayPal at the bottom of our website, nowplayingpodcast.com.
I still will be here tomorrow.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
Look, this is what I do. This is my job.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
Is my jaw supposed to drop?
Now Playing is edited by Santiago and Arnie.
Sleep or no sleep, I'm not missing this.
Now Playing credits read by Brock.
You ain't hear him, Griffin?
Now Playing is not affiliated with the makers of this film. The movie and its characters are the property and trademark of its producing companies, and no infringement is intended.
What are you talking about? What does that mean?
The opinions expressed in Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
You're lying. Because what's really happening is that you're hiding something out there. I'm right, aren't I?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Go home to your family. Keep them safe, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
You guys start a race towards Furiosa with some car race carnage.
I can't believe how long this franchise is. I was like, yeah, let's throw Death Wish. God damn it, I keep saying Death Wish.
I know, we kept doing that.
Let's throw Death Race in with a whole bunch of car movies.